If you're a father, your family looks to you as a role model. So when you're not sure what to do, who do you turn to? John MacArthur shows you who sets the example that dad should follow. Next on Grace to You. Part of serving your family as a dad, or for that matter, part of any believer's ministry to others, is to set an example worthy of being followed. But the fact is, knowing the best thing to do isn't always crystal clear. It's in those moments of uncertainty that you may wonder, whose example should I follow? Well, John MacArthur is answering that question in his current series here on Grace to You. As he's explaining, you'll find the model right in your own church. The Bible gives specific standards for pastors and elders, and John is showing you how those principles apply to dads, and moms too, as you lead your families. The study is called Qualities of an Excellent Servant. Let's listen now for the specific qualities that need to be true of you and all ministers in the church and in the home. Here's John MacArthur with the lesson.
Well, let's open our Bibles together to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4. And we're looking again at the qualities of an excellent minister of Jesus Christ. The qualities of an excellent minister of Jesus Christ in verses 6 through 16. The excellent minister has authority, pursues godliness, studies the word, warns his people, works hard, and avoids unholy teaching. That's all in the past. Let's go to number 7. It's a very important and basic truth. An excellent minister is the model of spiritual virtue. The model of spiritual virtue. Now, this is to be comprehensive in five areas. Notice those five areas in verse 12. One, in speech. In word, it says. That just means what it says. Speech. Conversation. The conversation of the servant of God is to be exemplary. Exemplary. Jesus said in Matthew 12, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The mouth speaks. Whatever comes out of the mouth is a revealer of the heart. And that's why Jesus said, by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. In other words, just let me hear you talk, and I can tell you the state of your heart, right? The speech of the servant of God is to be exemplary speech. What kind of speech? Well, let's look at Ephesians 4. We'll dig into this much more deeply when we come to James 3 in our Sunday night series and get into that whole chapter on the tongue. But for the moment, in Ephesians chapter 4, it says regarding conversation, verse 25, put away lying. So the first thing that should never, ever come out of the mouth of the servant of the Lord is a lie. Should never be any falsehoods, untruths. Never any talking out of both sides of the mouth, telling one thing to one person and another thing to another person. No lying. Speak every man absolute truth with his neighbor. Tell everybody the truth. Boy, I'll tell you, it just destroys leadership credibility when people begin to compare notes about falsehoods that have been passed around. Somebody telling one thing to one person, another thing to another. They meet, compare notes, and know you're a liar. There is to be absolute honesty in speech. A man should be able to stay in a ministry year after year after year after year and never, ever be thought to speak anything but absolute truth. Furthermore, verse 26, be not angry to the point of sin. There's a place for holy wrath and holy sort of righteous indignation, but no place for the sin of anger. And especially that smoldering anger that goes past one day into the next and so forth. And that's another thing reflected in speech, anger. No man in the ministry, no excellent servant of Jesus Christ will ever speak words of wrath, speak words of anger. We'll never get to the point where he is frustrated, upset to the sin level in terms of his speech, where his words are angry, bitter, vitriolic, vengeful, ungracious, or whatever. His speech is always to be filled with grace, seasoned with salt, to the purpose of edifying other people, not angry. And then in verse 29, obviously, let no filthy talk come out of your mouth. First of all, no speech that is less than true. Secondly, no speech that is less than loving. Thirdly, no speech that is less than pure. Nothing is more tragic to me than to be in the association at some point with some person who says they serve Jesus Christ, out of whose mouth comes some dirty talk. That just shows a dirty heart. There's no place for that. No place for corrupt or filthy communication. But what is coming from the mouth, he says in verse 29, is good to the usefulness of building up, and that it may minister grace unto the hearers. Your speech should bring that which builds them spiritually and that which brings them grace. There's a place for fun. There's a place for joy. Laughter does good like a medicine. A merry heart, says the scripture, is beneficial. But there's no place for dirty talk, no place for angry speech, and no place for speech which is less than true. You have so many illustrations through the history of the church of men who in anger have really destroyed their credibility, men who have told stories that are dirty, double entendre, low-level conversation. And they really set a standard. Not only in my mind and in the heart of God are those people disqualified for ministry, but they lower the standard of ministry to that level, and everybody who knows they're like that says, well, that must be acceptable kind of Christianity, right? So that just drops the standard to an unacceptable point. Colossians 3:8 says the same thing. You might look at it for a moment. Colossians 3:8, almost the same kind of context, seeking to help us understand what it means to put off the old man and put on the new, just as Ephesians 4 did, says to put off, verse 8, anger, wrath, evil, and the idea is evil speech, blasphemy, dirty talk out of your mouth, and lying, verse 9. All that has to do with the mouth. And there should be no anger, wrath, evil, blasphemy, filthy talk, or lies coming out of the mouth of anyone, any believer, especially someone in spiritual leadership. So first of all, Timothy, if you're going to be an example, it starts with your speech. Secondly, you should be an example not only in speech, but in conduct. May I suggest another word? Lifestyle. Lifestyle, behavior. This has to do with a righteous life. You're to be a model of righteous living. A person who lives out their convictions, who lives out biblical principles, who lives out godliness in every area of life. The things you do, the places you go, the things you possess, the way you spend your life, the lifestyle you live, your manner of living is really a sermon. It is so loud a sermon that it will overpower, or it will come alongside what you say. Some people have come to our church, told me about a pastor they had who's in the Los Angeles area, who was so deeply involved in materialism and so forth. In fact, I've heard a couple of them recently. One pastor was given a new Rolls Royce from his people who wanted to give it to him, I guess, as a gift. I guess they knew that's what he wanted, so they gave him a Rolls Royce. He told him to take it back and redo the whole interior. He didn't like the color of it. I recently heard about another situation very similar to that. That's not uncommon in the ministry. The ministry can be a place where men can feed. They can feed like the horse leech talked about in the Old Testament, sucking blood out of people for their own self-aggrandizement. Paul said, I have coveted no man's silver, no man's gold, and no man's apparel. I don't want anything from you except to give my life to you. That's all. That's all I want. But you take a lifestyle like that and match it up with a biblical message, and you've got blatant hypocrisy. Blatant hypocrisy. And the undermining of everything that is being said. And you say, which is true? I'll tell you which is true. The man is what he lives, not what he says. That's always the way it is. But when a man says it and lives it, then you have power in the message. Then you have authority in the message. You have believability. What about lifestyle? It's basic. It's absolutely basic. If we are to set the kind of living style that others are to follow, then it has to be right. James 3:13 says, Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good life his works with meekness. Who is the wise? Who is the knowledgeable man? The man who shows you with his life how to live. That's the man you want to follow. That's the man. Peter really nails it, 1 Peter 1:15. But as he who called you is holy, so be ye holy in all your lifestyle. It's a holy lifestyle. Verse 18, you were redeemed from your former lifestyle, now unto a holy lifestyle. 1 Peter 2:12, he says it another way, having your behavior or your lifestyle honest among the pagans, that though they may speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. Your life should be so good and so virtuous, your lifestyle so honorable, so biblical, so Christ-exalting, that your critics have absolutely nothing to say. 1 Peter 3:1 says, to a wife with an unsaved husband, you will win your husband not by your words, but by your lifestyle, by your behavior, your conduct, your godliness, your chaste conduct coupled with reverence, he says in verse 2. In verse 16 of the same chapter, having a good conscience, whereas they speak of you as evildoers, they may be ashamed that falsely accuse your good lifestyle in Christ. Isn't that wonderful? It's how you live. It's where you go. It's what you do. It's how you spend your money. And I'm not saying you should be poor. I'm not saying you can't accept what God wonderfully, graciously gives you. It's a question of what you pursue. I've said so many times that I've been blessed beyond most people, and sometimes I feel so bad about it until I consider the source of it. And if I can look in my own heart and say I haven't sought it at all, I haven't sought it, and if God in His grace has chosen to give it, then I can accept it. It's a question of attitude. You can have a bad lifestyle even though you don't possess a lot. Your bad lifestyle is you just want a lot. And the pursuit is wrong whether you ever get your end or not. On the other hand, God may choose to bless you and your heart is right and you use everything you have for His glory. Well, what is your style of life? Where do you spend your time? Where do you spend your money? Where do you spend your energy? I see the lifestyle around us in the world today so absolutely incompatible with everything that is biblical. I see families being absolutely disintegrated because everybody in the house wants to work, and so the family goes to pieces while everyone goes to work so they can buy bigger houses, bigger cars, and then when they do have spare time, they're down working on the physical body instead of working on the spirit, the soul, the family, the children. So much confusion in lifestyle. Instead of the church maintaining an alternative, the church gets sucked up in the same stuff. So those in spiritual leadership are to be a model of lifestyle, behavior, conduct. Thirdly, this is so wonderful, you're to be an example, Timothy, in love. In love. You better be a lover, and by that it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a handshaker and a backslapper and a baby kisser, although all that's fine. That's kind of fun part of the ministry, but when you talk about love, you have to use a biblical definition. We're not talking about spiritual goosebumps and emotions and feelings and the fuzzies and the warm and fuzzy kind of feelings that sometimes you get in a fellowship environment. What we're talking about in biblical love is self-sacrificing service in the lives of others. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man do what? Lay down his life for his friends. I believe in my heart that's ministry. You just lay down your life for your friends. That's all. And it's no sacrifice because you understand the goal is eternal. You're back to verse 10. Isn't this what love is all about? Isn't this what God calls the servant to love his people to the point where he just gives away all of his energies and his time for the purpose of communicating the things of God to them and seeing them strengthened and build up in the Lord? I mean, that's what it's all about. That's all there is for life, nothing else. God so loved that he what? That he gave, and anything less than that isn't love. There are the givers and the takers in the world. The true lovers are the givers, not the takers. And ministry is all about giving and giving and giving to meet needs. Paul says to the Thessalonians that wonderful, wonderful testimony of his affection for them, that he treated them like a nursing mother cherishes her children. What devotion. 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 7 and following. We were affectionately desirous of you, willing to have imparted unto you not the gospel of God only, but our own souls, because you were dear to us. And so remember that our labor and our travail was day and night. We worked and worked and worked on your behalf. We exhorted, we encouraged, we charged every one of you that you would walk worthy of God. And we gave our life to that, he says. And even he did his own work to earn his own living. There was Epaphroditus, chapter 2, who nearly died in the service of God's people. He gave himself so strenuously to service that Paul says he was near unto death, but God had mercy on him. Why was he near unto death? For the work of Christ. He didn't regard his life to serve me. He was expendable. That's love. Give yourself away. Paul says, if I'm offered on the sacrifice of your joy, I rejoice. I don't mind giving my life for you. You know, we've only got the one life, you know. That's the biblical kind of thing that is referred to when it says, Timothy, you're to be an example of love. It's self-sacrificing service on the basis of others. And you have the same responsibility. As I said all the way along, these things are not just me, but they're you too. So you're to serve your love to others in terms of self-sacrificing interest in meeting their needs. Fourthly, he says in faith, and that's in verse 12, in faith. The word faith really could be translated faithfulness or trustworthiness or loyalty. Fidelity, unswerving commitment, consistency. The idea is be consistent, Timothy. Be faithful, loyal, trustworthy, believable, because you don't swerve off the track. You're not in and out, hit and miss, up and down, back and forth. You're there. You're solid. You're moving, unswerving, consistently, always committed, never deviating. Boy, that's the kind of thing people can follow. That's the kind of bandwagon they get on. Moreover, brethren, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 4:1-2, Paul says, moreover, brethren, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. The real thing that separates men in the ministry from those who succeed, who separates between those who succeed and those who fail, is this idea of consistency. Who are the loyal, trustworthy, faithful, long-term people who hang in there unswervingly, consistently serving Christ through all the years of their life? That's the faithfulness. Timothy, just be consistent, unwavering. So important. You know, there are always the flash in the pan approaches, but we're to be consistent, faithful, never, ever deviating. Paul had that reputation, the reputation of absolute faithfulness. He mentioned some of his friends who were the same. Epaphras, Colossians 1:7, who is a faithful minister of Christ. Colossians 4:7, he mentions another of his friends, Tychicus, who is a faithful minister and fellow servant in the Lord. That's the key, just consistency and faithfulness to the things of God. So Timothy, you're to be an example in all these areas. And one more, finally, in verse 12, in purity. The word is agneia. It means purity in the area of sexual chastity. And also implies purity in the matter of heart intention. If your heart intention is pure, then your behavior will be pure as well. There is to be purity in the sexual area. History has shown, and it's just obvious to all of us, that ministry is devastated by sexual impurity. Just devastated. And I believe the men in the leadership of the church are vulnerable in that area if they let their guard down, because I think that's a primary area of occupation by Satan because of its devastating effect. So there must be a maintenance of absolute moral purity, fleeing lust. We want to be, 2 Timothy 2, don't we, vessels fit for the master's use? Then he says, flee youthful lust. Now, let me sum this up. Listen carefully. If a person, to be an excellent minister of Jesus Christ, is to be a model of virtue in speech, lifestyle, sacrificial love, trustworthiness, and moral purity, then listen carefully. Anybody who isn't a model in those things has no business being in the position of spiritual leadership. Why? Because if he lives at a lower level, that's where he sets the standard. And the responsibility of spiritual leadership is not to live in isolation like some outer space kind of saints, but to live at the level where God wants everybody to live. And the standard has to be maintained. Now, how can you do that? How can we change what's going on in our country? Well, I think several things. One, men who are disqualified ought to get out of the ministry and do something else. Maybe God will bless them and use them even more if they don't try to be hypocritical. I'm sure He would. Two, we need to pull together pastors from all around the world and reinforce to them these truths. We got to police the movement. Somebody has to do it. We have to get control of this thing. And so that means two things. We've got to demand that men who aren't qualified get out. And then we've got to call the men who are qualified to stay pure. We've got to get these guys together and set the standard, whether personally in counseling with them or preaching these things to them or giving tapes to them. We've got to keep setting that standard up. And then the third thing is we've got to train a whole new generation of young people who are totally committed to these standards. I'm not willing to accept a lower standard, and I don't think you are either. And I know the Lord isn't. But if we're going to have the high standard, we got to set it out there again. We got to start measuring people by it. And if they don't qualify, that's got to be made known. And if they do, they've got to be called to an ongoing holiness. And then we've got to raise up young men who are committed to these things. We do have to police the movement, folks. We should be as eager to put the wrong person out as we are to get the right person in, right? Well, let's bow in prayer. Father, there's no intention in our hearts, and you know that, to set ourselves up as the model of all spiritual virtue, for that would not be true of any of us. But Lord, by your Spirit and your grace and the application of your holy word, we know we can be what you want us to be as much as is humanly possible. I thank you for the modeling of speech and behavior, the modeling of love, the modeling of loyalty, trustworthiness, the modeling of purity. I thank you that you have set many examples before us. So, Father, I just pray that where there are those men who name your name and stand in the pulpit, and Lord, their life is not right, and their ministry is not honoring to you, I ask, Lord, that you would remove them from that they might not detract, that they might not destroy, that they might not lower the standard. And Father, I ask that you would take that great host of godly, faithful men and that you would bind their hearts even more closely to the standard that you have revealed and make them more zealous than ever in the power of the Spirit to live to that standard and to keep that example high. And I would pray for a new generation of young men who can be the leaders in your church around the world who have that high standard. Help us, Lord, to build them in our churches, to nurture them in our personal discipleship, so that we can see days ahead, should Jesus tarry, of great ministry for your word in the church and in the world.
What God expects of the excellent servant is what God expects of you. In other words, if you're a Christian, you're called to serve others, and understanding God's expectations is crucial. That's a challenging point from John MacArthur here on Grace to You, as he brings the study, Qualities of an Excellent Servant. John, you had a lot to say about the moral standards that God calls church leaders to embrace. Of course, it's not just elders and deacons, but every Christian who needs to pursue purity. I know that you're concerned that every man and woman listening understands that.
You know, I think, Carl, because there are standards in the Bible for pastors, very clear ones, 1 Timothy 3, Titus chapter 1, that it might be easy to assume that these standards of holiness and virtue and purity and doctrinal integrity really are only for pastors. That's just the opposite of the truth. The point is that pastors need to live their lives according to these standards so that they can be an example to the believers who are called or commanded to follow their faith. It's critical that all of us as believers know that whatever the standard is for a faithful pastor is the standard for everyone. Let me share a letter that came from a man named Pete that tells us how important it is for pastors to be faithful in their living and in their teaching. Dear Dr. MacArthur, thank you so much for teaching the truth of Jesus Christ. I listen as often as I can on WLQV in Detroit. This note is especially regarding your recent series called The Sinfulness of Sin. Your teaching about heart lust hit me especially hard. I'm personally exposed, convicted, and humbled by this truth, and I can't imagine your series not applying to millions of others like me. You helped me look even deeper into the source of my sin, my heart, and I can see some of what God has been seeing inside me all along. This is very encouraging. I can now apply my prayers more specifically toward my lustful desires and intentions, pray differently, and think differently, and that will move me closer to victory. I'm grateful that during the broadcast you prayed for and with me and millions of others just like me who struggle with lustful desires, and it's signed Pete. So important for us to live the truth and teach the truth so others can follow that example. In a day when Bible teaching is becoming harder and harder to find, especially confrontive teaching about sin, pray for this ministry. We're going to be faithful to do what we know God uses to transform lives.
Why don't you take a moment and let us know that you're praying for us? And let me encourage you to contact the staff of this radio station and let them know that you're praying for them and that you appreciate hearing Grace to You. Express your support today. Our mailing address is Grace to You, Post Office Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Like Pete in Detroit, who wrote the letter John just read, won't you let us know how God is convicting and encouraging you through Grace to You? And if you're able, include your financial support to help us reach other folks just like you, people eager for verse-by-verse Bible instruction. Please write today. That address again is Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Or call the toll-free number, 1-800-55-GRACE. Now, let me suggest some meaningful Father's Day gifts. First, John's current radio series is called Qualities of an Excellent Servant. Second, the new MacArthur Study Bible in the New American Standard Translation. And third, the daily devotional book called Drawing Near. To ensure your gift arrives before Sunday, you need to talk directly with our customer service staff between the hours of 7:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. Pacific Time. They'll help you arrange the express shipping option that best meets your need. Call now, 1-800-55-GRACE. Again, 1-800-55-GRACE. Thanks for listening. I'm Carl Miller. For John MacArthur and the entire staff, we hope that you'll be back tomorrow for another half hour of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on the next Grace to You. God has given parents and pastors solemn responsibilities to shepherd those under their care, to serve and lead them. But how do you keep your sheep from going astray? John shows you how tomorrow on Grace to You.